You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, it's 9:04 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, reminding you that it's Gilbert Christmas this Friday out at Klein's. It's 5868 West Homer. We're going to be there from 7 until 10. And we're doing our Christmas show. We got all kinds of stuff. Coors Light has graciously given us all kinds of beer. Freebirds is going to feed us. And we've got donuts as well. And so don't worry about food or drink. We got all of that covered. And we've got field goal kicking. We got basketball. Did you ever talk to Tyler? Is he getting that?
Me?
Yeah. You said you were going to ask him about that. He better... Tyler said he's going to pick up the goal from...
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me know when that happens.
From hoops. No. Tyler, let's go. Get a move on. Let's go. Get over there. Get that goal. We're going to have all of the stuff, the eggnog chug and the frozen T-shirts and the pass drills and onside kick and just all kinds of great stuff. And we are hoping that you can come and bring money or a gift card, nothing that you got to work through the internet. You know, if you want to bring a gift card for a restaurant, that's fine. Gilbert will go there and destroy them. But if you want to buy him a sweatshirt or a T-shirt or a hat, and you want to bring it over after the show at 10 o'clock, we're going to all caravan over to hospice, whatever. It's a nursing home. And we're going to bring it to him and make his Christmas. So we're hoping that you can do that with us and make it a great Christmas for Gilbert, because he is in a bad way. He's all alone over there and feeling pretty gloomy. So we hope you can join us on Friday and bring something for Gilbert. Anything helps. Whatever it is, he'll be... I mean, we're not sure he'll be very appreciative. You know, hey, this doesn't fit me. Hey! You know,
from time to time, what's that? I didn't ask for that anyway.
I don't want that. Okay, Gilbert.
Nope.
No.
What about when Gilbert, I'll never forget, we had, like, you were getting him egg rolls, I think, from, his favorite is China Garden egg rolls. That's my wife's favorite, too.
Mm-hmm.
But,
my favorite, too.
Egg rolls from China Garden, and he wasn't happy because there wasn't enough in there or something. Hey. Or no, he picked them up. That's it? Like, it was like four or something.
Well, what about
Gilbert will look, he'll look a gift horse in the mouth from time to time.
What about when Ian brought him club seats for the Texans? I mean, gave him his club seats, four club seats that's worth probably about over $1,000.
Oh,
he brings them to Knicks play.
Are they? They're worth $48, John.
No. This was seven, eight years ago.
Oh, see, I thought you were using.
No. Now they're,
because they're a lot like, they're a lot like cryptocurrency, where it's like they used to be worth this, and now they're worth this.
No, they're not worth the paper they're not printed on now.
It's like my DraftKings stock.
You can't give them away. You have to pay me. On top of giving me the tickets, you'd have to pay me to go. He was like 5 minutes late. Hey, you said you were going to be here 11:30 anyway. Oh, sorry, Gilbert. I was 5 minutes late. I was running behind because of, you know, work. I apologize, Gilbert. It was like, oh, my gosh, Gilbert. Anyway, so we're doing this for Gilbert. Who cares if he appreciates it or not? We're doing it for us. We're doing it to make ourselves feel good about ourselves.
And that's what the Christmas spirit is
about. That's what it's about.
Did you feel good about yourself?
Yeah. I'm going to try and
It's about two things.
Right.
Making yourself feel good about yourself and getting stuff.
Yes, that's it. So yesterday in his press conference, I mean, Coach Cully said, hey, you know what? I'm getting better at this coaching thing. Okay. All right, Coach. Yeah, I'm doing a better job now because, and he, this is disheartening. It really is disheartening because I like Coach Cully, and I just don't want to see him killing himself the way he is, because he's destroying any chance he has of coming back next year when he admits that he's listening, not only listening, but that he doesn't even understand what they're saying. Get the one where Coach Cully admits that he didn't understand what they were saying about let them score. Aaron, you got that one? All right. Here's Coach. Listen to this. This is so disheartening.
I go back again to the New England game. I can remember just like it was yesterday that the conversation went, let him score. I mean, I heard the conversation, and then all of a sudden, it didn't compute to me at that time. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden now from that point on, I've learned that to be ahead of those things and things. When you're ahead of those things like that, you're much better to make those decisions. That means you're going to make the right decision, but when you make that decision, you're pretty sure about making that decision.
Well, and here's who was telling him, and this was the revelation too, on the headset, Nick and Romeo, they're on the headset. Nick Caserio, the general manager, and Romeo Crennel, his consultant, are on the headset during the game telling him this.
Well, just like I go back to the two-minute situation when we're in it, I immediately went online with Nick, and obviously he and Romeo talked about it and says, okay, our timeouts now. How do we need to use these timeouts, you know? And then immediately, okay, at this, depending on what happened on this play, we need to call it. If this doesn't happen, then don't call a timeout. So all those things are discussed before we ever get to that point. Like, we're usually a play ahead of that. And then when it happens, then I've got to be ready to make that decision. And that's usually Aaron with all those kinds of decisions, you know.
And play the soundbite where he talked about the specifics of the New England game and how, you know, he learned on the move,
no, we
on
just
the
played
run.
It.
That was before.
Yeah,
okay, so we played them out of sequence.
Yeah,
I got you.
Right.
Because in they were in sequence. In the, I don't know. I just don't know what to say. I mean, I really feel bad for David Culley. It's a little strange to have a general manager, Mark Ross, who's executive of football operations for the New York Giants, and who was with David Culley with the Eagles for 7 or 8 years. He loves David Culley, and he said he wanted to be diplomatic, but we had him on at 8 o'clock. You guys can catch the podcast with his interview on ESPN97.5.com on the podcast after the show's over. But he said, look, I've never heard of that. That's just something I've never heard of. Ray Farmer got in trouble for trying to give the team an advantage by using a cell phone. He got suspended using a cell phone in-game. That's illegal. It is legal, however, to be in a coach's box with the headsets on, and that's what Nick Caserio is doing. He's part general manager. He's part game manager. And what David Culley just told you is that Romeo Crennel and Nick Caserio are having discussions that he listens in on, and they are heavily involved in game management. They don't give – it doesn't sound like to me, John, they give suggestions. I think they are strongly suggesting what to do. They're not giving potential suggestions. They are suggesting this needs to happen. And I feel bad for David Culley that after –
But how many years does Coach have in the league, and he's got to be explained timeouts?
He's got years.
I mean,
no, I know. That's a problem.
It's not like the punter having to explain it like with Bill O'Brien.
Do you think there's any part of David Culley that wishes he didn't take this job?
No, zero.
And the money's so
the money
great, but
he's
I'm just
getting and but what he's doing. I mean, he was anonymous in the league. I mean, never heard of him. But people in the league knew him and loved him. Everybody loved him. But this job's just too big for him. It's just too big. And and this is on the Texans for doing this. This is on Nick Caserio for having to have somebody that he could control. This,
yeah, but you hurt a guy's reputation.
And if I'm David Culley after this is said and done, you know what? I'm going to be somewhat pissed at Nick Caserio because he did this to him. He shouldn't be in this position.
He said it out loud. He was not mad about it. He's not pissed about it. He mentioned it.
He will be when he gets fired. He will be when he gets fired.
Yeah. And see, people are looking at this as though it's you, not David Culley. In other words, I understand that if it were me and I'm getting paid the salary he's getting paid, yeah, you can do whatever you want to me. I'm going to take that money and retire, and I'll be happy. But that is his reputation. I wouldn't want to go out like a sucker if this is radio. My whole life has been radio. I wouldn't want to go out like a sucker. And I don't think David Culley wants to go out and have his reputation. Like, he didn't really have a reputation nationally, but he had one inside the business. Guys like David Culley a lot. I think they're going to look at this, and they're going to look at his tenure with the Texans, and I don't think he's going to be happy with how it's going to make him look And I feel bad for him as a person. I really do. I feel great that he's going to get his paycheck. That's awesome. And the guy's going to have a great, you know, he's going to have a great pension plan that will really take care of him. But this isn't a 48-year-old, a 52-year-old head coach. I mean, no. This is a guy who's been around the league. He's in his 60s, and this is his entire reputation is being damaged.
His legacy is done. I mean, it's bad. All right, it's 9:14. Sage Rosenfels joins us on the other side right here to talk. Well, we'll ask him about this, and we'll also talk about the decision-making that's going on in the NFL, some of the decisions. That's next right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Right now I'm talking about Champion Energy. Those are my peeps over there, Champion Energy, locally owned and operated. I love them, and you'll love them. My bill is just still tremendous. It's so easy to pay every single month because it's, you know, I never go, wow, what the heck? What is this? Never. I used to. I'd be like, whoa, that's a lot of money you guys are charging. I've never done that with Champion Energy. And you, my friends, are the ones that are going to benefit from a company that's just not as greedy as the other companies because everybody's got fees, right? But the ridiculous fees that you see with the other people, it's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable how they fee you to death. What I need you to do is go to champion.energy/1560 and start to save. You will save. You'll see immediate savings, and you'll be like, wow. A buddy of mine did it. He transferred over, and in the first month, he was like, you were right about this. It's unbelievable how much less he's paying every single month because of Champion Energy, and you will too. Champion.energy/1560.
You are listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. You're locked into The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Time now to look back at this past weekend's NFL action with former Texans QB Sage Rosenfels. For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sage Rosenfels joining us once again here on the show. Sage, welcome in. What's going on?
Good morning, fellas. Nice to come in after another Texans win in the rain. It seems like that's they play well in the rain, especially against Jacksonville.
Yeah, and, you know, if you didn't know which one was the number one overall pick and which one was the third rounder before you went into it, you might have said, oh, that guy on the Texans, he's the number one overall pick, right?
Well, I don't know if Davis's performance would have rocked the conclusion that he would
If you knew one of them was and one of them wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
You could have assumed that Davis was the better quarterback of the two.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think I brought this up last week. You know, for a third round draft pick, I think he's played well for a rookie. And Trevor Lawrence being the first overall pick, the guy who was the best player coming out of high school, the best player coming out of college, he didn't do anything special in this football game. And yeah, Davis played well. He made the plays necessary when it counted. To lead this team to victory. So, yeah, you couldn't really tell as you watch that football game which one of these guys has a $40 million guaranteed contract and which one of these guys is basically playing for the minimum.
Right. Sage Rosenfels.
Sage isn't buying into your nonsense. Trepidation.
No. Listen, but Trevor Lawrence doesn't look like a first. He doesn't look like the.
No, but let's. Okay, but so we got to say rookie, this.
And then we've seen Peyton struggle his rookie year, and he was 1-1, you know, overall. And we saw Peyton struggle early on in his rookie year. Trevor Lawrence is going to get it, right, Sage?
I think Trevor Lawrence is a good player. He didn't really struggle too badly in this ball game. He didn't turn the ball over. That's just a terrible football team. I mean, if Trevor Lawrence playing for the New England Patriots, I got to think he's playing pretty dang good football, and they probably have a winning record and have a chance to make the playoffs. I think he's going to be a very good quarterback in this division for a long time, and by no means is he some sort of a flop as far as the first overall pick. I think he's going to be a really good player, but that football team is a disaster. I mean, they just find ways to lose, whether it's giving up the kickoff return. Obviously, they had five drops in this ball game, about three of them on really easy third down. Just, you know, he might throw the ball low a couple times, but just straight up drops. And he's getting no help over there on that football team. It's, it is interesting to see this time of the year when teams are out of the playoffs, when teams don't have great leadership at the head coach position or just in the facility in general, and you see teams really fall apart and really shut it down. This is that time of year. We're in December. People are starting to make those postseason plans when you're out of the playoffs. I've been on these types of teams. You know, there's, I promise you, a lot of these players have already paid for hotels the weekend after the season ends to go take a trip to Las Vegas, to go take a trip to the Caribbean, or just get out of the football world. And it seemed like to me Jacksonville is well on their way onto those vacations.
Sage Rosenfeld's with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So, Sage, I don't know if you've heard, I don't know if you saw Mike Florio or if you heard any of this, but Coach Cully says that that Nick Caserio and Romeo Crennel are on the headsets during the game, and they're giving him advice on how to handle timeouts and stuff like that during the game. Have you, you've been in the NFL for a long time. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
I have not. I've never been in a situation where people that weren't, you know, the, basically the head coach with maybe some advisement from other coaches sort of controlled the timeouts and what the situation is. I mean, in particular in this situation where the head coach is not calling all the plays, usually that should be, you know, his, one of his specialties. One of his jobs is to decide when and when not to take timeouts, when to go for it. But nowadays things have changed a little bit, but usually not a guy like, you know, Nick Caserio or someone who's not, coaching, you know, sort of on the staff, is in the head coach's ear. So yeah, that is unusual, but it does seem like more and more you're getting different voices. You know, you have the analytics experts and you have all these sort of different voices, trying to make the best decision as far as, you know, game day operations, when to call timeouts, when to not call timeouts, when to go for it. That has sort of changed over the years. So I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, the head coach can take advisement from whoever he wants, and as long as it's, you know, within the, I guess, the legal boundaries of what are the NFL rules are, how many people can be on those headsets. You know, he can sort of do what he feels is best for the team, and, well, and that, obviously this is where he's getting that bad advisement.
Honestly, I mean, I feel like it's you're going to get better decision making from Romeo Crennel and Nick Caserio probably than David Culley based on previous decision making from Coach Culley. But I do think it brings up an interesting question, because Bill O'Brien told another coach on his staff that he felt like the model of one person controlling the entire organization was the right model. And Bill O'Brien, of course, thought the head coach should be that guy. Nick Caserio comes from a model where the coach is, but maybe Nick Caserio wants to have that. What are your feelings on the best way to build out a front office? There's different ways to do it, but what does Sage Rosenfeld thinks the best way to build out an organization is from a power structure standpoint based on your time in the league?
Well, that's a deeper a question, because yep. I sort of saw it all. There were times where, you know, I was drafted. Marty Schottenheimer was the coach in Washington. He basically had control of everything. Actually, John Schneider, the Seattle Seahawks longtime general manager, he was sort of our quasi-general manager. He was in sort of control of the draft and the players and the scouting and those types of things. But at the end of the day, Marty ran the show. Then you go on to Miami. Similar sort of structure when Dave Wansett was the head coach, then Nick Saban comes, and of course, you know, Nick Saban wants to run absolutely everything. Then I go to Houston, and with Kubiak, you know, he wasn't picking all the players. It was more of Rick Smith's job, and they sort of had that separation of powers. So, you know, every place I went, Tom Coughlin in Minnesota, they sort of had a separation up with it, or not Minnesota, but with the New York Giants. They sort of separated into, there's a salary cap guy, and there is the sort of general manager, and there's Coughlin, and everyone was, you know, sort of had their job. There's many ways to do it. I don't think there's a best way. I think when you're an owner of a franchise, you have to decide what structure you want to try to at least hold somebody accountable, right? So, but the hard part is the owners aren't experts in football. So you go and you go, okay, the GM insist that we've got very good players, but we're not playing well, so then it must be the head coach's fault who doesn't have the right coaches on the staff to get those good players to play well. But at the same time, you're going to have the head coach say, hey, the schemes are good, the coaching's good, we don't have good enough players. And so it's a lot of times it creates these weird power struggles. You know, is it the salary cap person's fault for giving up too much money for certain players and making mistakes from a salary cap standpoint? So you do have an interesting mix or an interesting chemistry that can be created with sort of like the three-headed monster, as some teams like to call it. And then you've got the situation where it's one person completely in charge. If the team doesn't go play well, that one person can be to blame. But then the problem is you have to completely start over when you, say, fire the head coach who is in sort of control of everything. And when you have to do that, that's sort of like everyone moves out and you have to completely start from scratch. And that can be a very big challenge where if you have sort of a three-headed monster type of structure, you can fire the head coach. If you feel good about the players and the salary cap situation, bring in a new head coach and sort of continue on what you might have some positive things going. So it isn't, I don't know if there's a right way to do it or a wrong way to do it. I know to be the guy that you have full power of everything, you better have won a lot in the past and been one of those head coaches who has had many winning teams, many winning playoff games, maybe some Super Bowl runs. Before you get that power, you don't want to put too much on a head coach's plate. They have a lot to think about, and I've always sort of thought that you let the scouting people do what they do. You do want the head coach's influence. At the end of the day, I think it's important for the head coach to sort of be able to throw his weight around a little bit because it is his football team. At the end of the day, to choose that player when he really wants it, a certain player in a draft or a certain player in free agency. But I think it is sort of too much for the head coach to control the entire roster and all the all the drafts and all those things. It's a huge operation.
Well, we've got living proof of that. It's called the Houston Texans after Bill O'Brien that had all that power, and look at where it is. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate you. We got to take a break. 928 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. But first, let's talk about Craig DeSerf.
Yeah, Craig DeSerf wants you to come on out to Angleton and come get your new car. Your new vehicle can be a Chevy Silverado pickup truck, a GMC Sierra pickup truck. It might be a Chevy Traverse. It might be a Buick Enclave or the Equinox. There's so many different vehicles out there to choose from. But the great thing is they've got a bonus red tag cash special right now where if it's got the red tag on the vehicle, that is going to be a $500 additional subtraction, a bonus offering that they're giving you. And that's on top of anything that you may have with dealer cash back or incentives that are currently available for any of the vehicles you're looking at. That $500 is going to stand alone, and it will be taken off the price of the vehicle as well. Of course, you can negotiate your price. You can get a ton of trade-in value for your vehicle. If you've got relatively low mileage on your vehicle, golly, you are getting unbelievable payouts for those vehicles. So make sure that you see my friends in Angleton because they've got some great offers, including the red tag bonus offer of $500 cash. Out in Angleton, you can save thousands of dollars. Start the car buying experience online at LanceZCars.com.
This is Carlos Correa, All-Star and World Series champion, and big fan of Gulf Coast Chevrolet in Angleton. No one will treat you better. Chevy, find new roads.
You're locked into The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Time now to look back at this past weekend's NFL action with former Texans QB Sage Rosenfels. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Unfortunately, this is our last segment of the year with Sage. It's been great, Sage, getting your input all season long. We're off next week, and then you got the new year. So we are. This is it. We're wrapping it up with Sage. It's been great. You're doing work here, and you're doing work in Chicago, we know. And it's arguable right now, if you had to rank, okay, the Jacksonville offense, the Texans offense, the Bears offense, the Jets offense, that's some really, really poor football right there, isn't it?
It's not great. Watching Chicago, and, you know, I think Chicago's offense statistically might be worse than the Texans. It's pretty bad over there. And, you know, they are this team that Matt Nagy was hired as the offensive sort of guru, as they say, coming from another sort of Kansas City Andy Reid assistant coach, get the head coaching job somewhere else, and known for sort of his offense. This guy's going to be coming in doing the spread. He was doing the RPO stuff. You know, it's a little bit new to the league in the last 5 years, and it's just been a disaster. Mitchell Trubisky obviously was a sort of a huge failure within that system. Now, you have Justin Fields, and he's really struggling that system. The Jets are, of course, really bad. And you know, we got to see Jacksonville just the other day and just how bad they are. I mean, they have Laquon Treadwell out there, who is a massive failure with the Minnesota Vikings, and he's out there starting, right? And so there's just, like, nobody that really scares you on that team either. So, yeah, there's some really bad football out there, bad offensive football, and I'm very lucky that I get to watch two of them in my Tuesday morning job. But, you know, that's the way it goes. It is for me. Watching football is so much fun. The fact that I, you know, make a few bucks watching football, life is pretty good over here.
So there's only one measurement that the Bears are worse than the Texans, and that's in passing yards. They're 6 yards worse per game, but the Texans are the second worst in points per game. The Texans are worst in the league in total yards. So while it may appear that the Bears are in the same neighborhood, the Texans are all time bad offensively.
Yeah, it's bad. Well, they've also had a rookie quarterback for a lot of the year. Anytime you have sort of a, it's not a totally new system, but you know, I don't think that it doesn't seem like to me that what they're running now, which is sort of more outside zone and play action, was what they were running when they started the season. They were in shotgun a lot. I remember those first preseason games. I remember that first game of the year with Tyrod Taylor. They were in shotgun and running more of that Baltimore-style offense. And, you know, as when you all of a sudden bring in a rookie who has to play a lot, those offenses are really, really hard for rookie quarterbacks. And so then they sort of switch to a more traditional, you know, run the ball, play action, leave that tight end in blocking to help out that young quarterback. And they sort of had to transition, so they couldn't ever really figure themselves out of, you know, what type of offense is this really going to be? What type of offense do they want to be? And what's the most sort of effective of just winning football games? It's not always about yards. To me, it's way more about points and how you do in the red zone and what's your third down stuff. For years, Kirk Cousins, say with Minnesota Vikings, he's been a guy that's put up great stats, you know, yards, completion percentage. But at the end of the day, he always sort of ends up with a 500 record. So it's like, well, all that stuff doesn't really matter. It's like, what are the key points in a football game? Well, those key third downs, those key red zone plays, those are the ones that matter the most. And obviously the Texans, one of those teams trying to figure themselves out and sort of trying to sort of move and change as their season went on to try to, what was the best way to win each football game each week. And there were some really bad performances out there. And also I saw a lot of good things. I mean, I saw a lot of good things out of Davis Mills. I don't know what he's going to be long-term with his franchise or for his career, but, you know, to go on the road and to play as a rookie and to get a big win was really big for him. I feel like he's very accurate. He doesn't miss very many throws. He doesn't make a lot of really bad decisions, especially as the year went on. He was protecting the football more, understanding it's a marathon. It's not a sprint when you're a quarterback within a football game. And I like him as a quarterback. I really do. And it's sort of what you said, despite the fact that they've been one of the worst offensive teams in the NFL this year. And there's some other bad ones too. As you said, the Jets with Zach Wilson up there, another rookie quarterback. Jacksonville, another rookie quarterback. Chicago, another rookie quarterback. I mean, there's all this hype coming up with the draft of what these rookie quarterbacks are, who's going to be drafted, and there's going to be a million commercials and a million ESPN segments of the quarterback this and the quarterback this. But as we look at it, statistically, rookie quarterbacks have had an unbelievably bad year in the NFL. And as I said, having Davis Mills, the third-round pick, I think the Texans should be pretty happy with his performance.
Sage Rosenfels, our guest here. And, you know, I think the question about team growth and building here in Houston, it's, for me, I'm focused on how they're going to build for the future. And I recognize people get Sage, people get a little bit impatient and they want to talk about, you know, whatever the heat of the moment thing is, but it's just a process that's going to take a while. There's no way to speed it up, and I'm willing to wait for it, even though it can be a little frustrating. But, you know, that's not always – it can't be easy when you look at some of the hot takes jumping off on Twitter, and really not just Twitter, on television shows from former players who are on TV in prominent roles now. I really honestly can't believe that these guys who have played in the league are making some of the short-sighted comments that they are making about some of the players and decision-making in the league. Are you seeing that as well? I'm surprised they don't have a little better perspective.
Well, it's like, you know, there's when you're a player, it's extremely competitive, right? And then you leave the game, you get into the media, and it's probably even more competitive. So there are fewer spots, right? There are about 1,600 to 1,700 jobs for NFL players. There's not 1,600 jobs for NFL players once they are done playing football in the media world. So from what I have seen over, you know, it's been almost 10 years for me now, you do see guys go out there and are they're very aggressive with their quote-unquote hot takes. You know, you have to have an extremely strong opinion about a player, about a team, about a coach, about something, so it, you know, makes waves and travels the Twitter sphere with a video of you making that hot take. But you know, they don't, the media world, they don't want, you know, just like, well, this team's probably going to be around 500 and, you know, they're okay, but they're not great and they're not terrible. They want either they're great or they're terrible, right? I feel like that's just sort of pushed out there to have a really, really strong take. And, you know, at the end of the day, as you look at an NFL, all the NFL teams, you've got a few really good ones. You've got a few really bad ones. The Texans are in that mix. And then you've got a ton of teams who are right there, you know, 8-6, 7-7, 6-8, right in the middle. And they're not great, nor they are terrible. And that's about two-thirds of the National Football League. But, yeah, I do think that when I've seen, you know, the sort of the hot takes, a really strong, aggressive, you know, sort of points of view of a lot of these former players as they are trying to sort of get into this world of the media after their playing days are done, because there are only so many, in particular, TV jobs out there on these major networks. There's only a few of them, and you're not gonna get on TV by saying, "Well, that team's just an average football team." That just doesn't happen that way.
Right, Sage Rosenfels here, ESPN 97.5. And 92.5, running out of time, but we heard John Harbaugh mic'd up asking the players, do you guys want to go for two? And of course, players are always going to say they're going to go for two, right? But we had an analytics expert on too, Sage, that said if that was the right call against Aaron Rodgers, it was the wrong call against Ben Roethlisberger. Agree?
Well, yeah, I think trying to you know, you always think back to when we come down Monday. We were one play away from winning that game, right? And if you kick the extra point and you end up losing in overtime to Aaron Rodgers, or maybe it's Tom Brady, or it's, you know, Patrick Mahomes, and you don't get the ball back, you never even see the ball because they went down your defense and scored, you're kicking yourself. Like, man, we were one play away from being Aaron Rodgers. And so I don't mind that call. If you're playing, you know, the New York Jets and Zach Wilson, you know, maybe you play for overtime and Zach throws the interception in overtime and, you know, we can go right down and score and win, right? So it definitely does, to me, it all has to do with who you're playing against, not necessarily where you're playing. If you look at the overall records, by the way, of home and away for NFL teams this year, it's pretty even. There's not some like big home field advantages in the National Football League in 2021. So it's not home or away. It's more who are you playing on the other side? And also, like, what was the game like? I mean, in that game, they came, Baltimore came flying back right at the end, had that momentum, and you'd hate to sort of go to overtime and then boom, again, give the ball to Aaron Rodgers, who's very well could win the MVP this year, and you never get the ball back. So I like that move. But as you said, players almost always say, yeah, let's go for it. Let's win it right now. I don't like that play call, though. And by the way, that kid Huntley really love the way he played for Baltimore, but I don't like the play call when you sprint out. It's either it works or it doesn't. There's not a lot of like, well, it didn't work, and there's another option. Like, you have eliminated, the defense having to cover the entire field. They only have to cover a really sort of shrunken section of the field, which means the throws are going to be really, really tight. And he didn't throw a great ball in that one, and obviously got deflected and basically game over. I do like going for two in that situation. Let's just go win this thing right now and not try to sort of wait to see if we can't beat Aaron Rodgers in overtime.
Can you imagine sprinting towards a boundary, which is another defender, which is the 12th defender? You're sprinting towards the boundary. I hate run plays, boundary side run plays as well a lot of times, but sprinting towards a boundary, and every quarterback invariably, I'm waiting for one of them to figure out, hey, you know what? Let me sit down and set my feet before making the throw so I can bring the backside throws into it. But it's, I think once you get rolling downhill on a rollout, there's really not a lot the quarterback can end up doing.
Well, I'm going to add to it. Mark Andrews was the tight end. Was the receiver on that play. So it was a true just one-on-one with the tight end versus the DB, and that was going to be the play. All or nothing. One quarterback to one player. And I love Mark Andrews as a tight end. I think he's one of the better ones in the NFL. But more of like on crossing routes and seam routes and corner routes. He's got a niftiness to him, but he's not like a tight end like Tony Gonzalez. Or even Graham from Chicago when he was younger. These guys that are like true post-up type of guys. I mean, that ball had to be absolutely perfect. There wasn't much. He's not a separation guy who's sort of like a wide receiver playing tight end. He's a good tight end, but he's not one of those guys you want to run on like individual routes out there. And so it sort of left Baltimore with one option. So I like the call to go for it. I just don't like the play call. As I said, it sort of eliminates most of the field. The defense only had to cover about 20% of the football.
Yep, that was it. Duvernay was running free in the back of the end zone. He was locked in on Andrews the whole time, and that was never going to work. All right, that's Sage Rosenfels. And Sage, again, thanks for joining us this year. It's been great. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we can talk to you again sometime soon.
All right, fellas. Thanks again for having me on.
All right. There's Sage Rosenfels right here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. News of the Weird, finish up strong here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, and some good stuff. Lance, let's talk a little bit about Aqueduct Plumbing right now, and Billy and Mary and all of the great people over there. I love the philosophy of let's come to your home. And let's give you an estimate. And let's do that absolutely free. Because there's a lot of these plumbers out there that they'll charge you just for coming out. Even if they're not going to do the work, they're going to charge you $70 just for coming out there. And Billy said, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. So what we're going to do is we're going to come and we're going to give you a fair and good estimate about what we are going to do. We're going to not do any work that we don't have to do. We're going to do the work ourselves. We're not subcontracting it. And we're going to give you a fair price for what you have to do. Listen, plumbing can be big, big, big jobs. And you never know if you're getting worked. But I'm going to tell you, I really like Billy and I really like Mary. And I don't think they're just not like that.
Yeah, and the thing is, they do the big works. Like, sometimes, I didn't realize this until a few years ago, all the gas movements, you want to get a gas pipe moved into an automatic grill on your patio or something like that. They do stuff like that. They do renovations. They do remodels. They do new construction. They also do leaky faucets and tankless water heaters. Like, there's so many services that they offer, John. That's something people need to recognize. Plumbers are responsible for so many different services, so you got to have one you can trust.
TheBenchPlumbing.com. TheBenchPlumbing.com. If you're looking for a great plumber, we got them for you. It's TheBenchPlumbing.com.
This is Jose Altuve, and you're listening to Jung and Lance on ESPN 97.5. Brought to you by Gulf Coast Chevrolet, Buick, and GMC.
Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Just a couple of minutes left here in the show. So we're about done. Lance, let me ask you this question. If you went to a place called the Smuggler's Inn, what do you think would happen?
You'd get kidnapped? I don't know. Smugglers, you bring stuff. You get arrested because they've got a bunch of stuff they're not supposed to have there?
Well, actually, the owner has been arrested because he actually smuggles people across the border from Whatcom into Canada. So the Smuggler's Inn actually is a Smuggler's Inn.
That's like somebody having the drug dealer's den, and you open up a big shop there in a strip center. What do you do here? Well, what do you think we do?
Mm-hmm.
We deal drugs here. Yeah, I mean, you can't do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Smuggler's Inn. Hey, there's nothing going on here, is there? Well, I mean, we smuggle.
Yeah, we smuggle. That's what we do. We smuggle people.
Hey, what are you guys doing here at Cocaine Palace? Nothing. There's nothing to see here, police. It's just Cocaine Palace.
The general manager, this general superintendent for the New York bus system, the MTA, apparently he's in charge of the Transit Association. Apparently he has been for years keeping a blow-up doll in his front seat so that he can use the HOV lane. Do you think that the head of the MPA should be able to bypass, you know, what regular people have to do?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, why not, right?
Why not?
Would you put a blow-up doll in your car to bypass the HOV laws?
No, I think that's too easy to tell. I would. Now, would it be more elaborate? Yeah, it'd be more elaborate. Not a blow-up doll. They're too easy to tell what they are. With the circular mouth? Come on.
Mm-hmm. Did you see that there actually are... Did you know what mole people are? There are actually mole people who live beneath Las Vegas. They have underground tunnels there. After 1975, a summer monsoon caused a flash flood that caused millions of dollars in damage. They built an extensive tunnel system under Las Vegas. And actually, somebody who murdered someone back in the day, actually Timmy Weber, back in 2002, almost 20 years ago, he used them to hide from the authorities after he murdered his girlfriend. But apparently now there's a whole group of people that are living. Would you like to live as a mole under Las Vegas?
Yeah, absolutely.
You think that would be a good idea?
Yeah, if I could get away from the kids for a little while.
You know what I'm saying? Well, yeah. No, the kids are down there with you.
Oh, no, I'm out. B!
Wait.
B!
You don't want to bring your kids under in the tunnels under Las Vegas? Do you want to visit the tunnels?
I don't want to even bring them into the other room with me. When I'm trying to get away.
Man, I'm looking at this. Ooh, it looks dank. It doesn't look like a place you want to live. I'm just telling you. I don't think I want to live down in the tunnels under Las Vegas. We're done. We will be back again tomorrow. Are you coming back tomorrow, or are you still going to be there?
I'm still going to stay here. I'll be on the show here.
You'll be from there tomorrow.
All
right. So Lance is giving out the Joe Moore Award today. Can't tell you where. Yep.
We'll tell you where tomorrow.
He'll tell you where tomorrow right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Y'all have a great day, everybody.
Bye, bitch.
ESPN 97.5.